If you had access to a powerful MRI and a team of researchers that look at the brain, ready to design an experiment, what would you want to do? One exhibition gave carte blanche to the public to come up with their own big question. And after all the comment cards came in, the science began. On this episode of the Oxford Sparks Big Questions podcast, we are looking at the brain, a massive MRI, and asking, how does the brain identify voices? Hello, I'm Emily Elias, and this is the show where we seek out the brightest minds at the University of Oxford, and we ask them to weigh in on those tricky questions. And today's big question comes from you. Cool, right? This episode really started about a year ago at the Brain Diaries exhibition at the Museum of Natural History in Oxford. The exhibition held a contest asking people to come up with their own research question, and if they won, they'd get a chance to watch it carried out live in the lab. 700 questions later, a group of researchers picked the top ones.
My name is James and I'm 11. Does the size of the magnet in the MRI scanner affect on how this scanner works?
My name is Misha Poseid and I'm 8. 9. Since lots of people can't tell me and my identical twin sister Lily apart, so my question was, if I look at a picture of my identical twin sister Lily, do I process it differently than when I look at a picture of myself?
And those are really good questions, but the winning question came from somebody a little bit older, Richard Harrow. He went to the museum for his 51st birthday.
If you're in a very large group of people, and say a loved one is, I don't know, in a crowd somewhere away, if everyone's shouting, there's lots of noise, how can the brain sort of tune in and home in on that voice? How can it pick up with all that extraneous noise? And so it always intrigued me that one can, you can do that. But what about if that vocal, that sound projection was distorted? Would the brain still manage to sort of tune in on the signature of that vocal projection?
And so, to answer this question, two researchers leapt into action.
So I'm Stuart Clare. I am a physicist who does research here in the MRI scanner in Oxford.
And I'm Holly Bridge. I'm a neuroscientist. I specialise in looking at the visual system with the MRI scanner.
And that MRI scanner we are talking about is at the Wellcome Centre for Integrative Neuroimaging at the John Radcliffe Hospital.
And so we use an incredibly strong magnet here. It's 7 Tesla strong. A 1 Tesla magnet would pick up a car. So our 7 Tesla magnet here is incredibly strong. It would pick up a double-decker bus.
That chirping sound is the MRI. It's kept in this big concrete room with a glass window that separates it from a control room where the technician sits. Before I'm even allowed into the control room next to it, I have to fill out this form asking me things like if I've ever had surgery, if I've had any accidents where metal shavings might be inside me, or if I have any tattoos, as some ink could have metal in it. This is all because it is an incredibly powerful magnet. And Stuart says, because it is such a powerful magnet, researchers get a really good look at what is happening in the brain.
So we're taking pictures of where the water is in the brain using very strong magnets and radio waves. And so we use those to map the water in the brain and also map where things like the blood is flowing.
And by looking at where the water is on the brain, experts can tell which parts are being stimulated and to a certain extent what you are thinking about.
You know, we have such a fascinating relationship with our brain. I mean, it sort of controls everything we do. We're very, it's just part of us. And I think just being able to see inside the brain and just think how that relates to the emotions that we feel, to the thoughts, to the everything we're doing is just absolutely fascinating. So I absolutely love it. And I still get very excited by doing this research.
In order to carry out Richard's experiment on how we identify voices using this MRI, we are going to need a volunteer.
Hi, I'm Aidan Sheldon and I'm a first year D4 student in WEN studying visual neuroscience. Today I was in the scanner.
You're the guinea pig.
Yeah, in a way.
What was it like to get into the scanner?
Well, it has a very high field strength. It's 7 Tesla. So as you like go through the magnetic field, you kind of feel like you're spinning. So you're actually stationary, but it feels like you're kind of in a car going around a bend, and you have that feeling for like a few minutes. And then once you're inside, I guess it's quite noisy and cold. So you have earbuds in, and you're meant to be very, very still. So it kind of feels like you're going through like a sensory deprivation type of thing. The size, what would it be like? Kind of going through maybe like those slides when you're a child, those like tunnel slides. It's kind of like going through one of those.
Okay, so we're going to get you into the scanner now. So we just get the mirror into position. Can you see the screen okay?
As Aislinn gets inside the scanner, there is quite the audience on the other side of the glass. There are researchers, there's Richard and the other contest winners, and there's a TV crew ready to broadcast the experiment on Facebook Live. I mean, this is the digital age after all. So to figure out how the brain actually identifies voices, the plan is to first map Aislinn's brain, and this is broken into two parts. First, she is shown pictures of houses and pictures of faces to pinpoint which part of her brain processes faces.
Hello there, are you doing okay in there? Excellent. We'll be starting the next scan shortly. Just a few seconds of noise coming up now.
Then in the second part, she hears these recordings of familiar voices made by her co-workers at the lab.
I hope you're enjoying the experiment. Have you heard my voice before?
I hope you're enjoying the experiment. Have you heard my voice before?
So as Aislinn is taking in all this information, red blobs start appearing on a monitor that shows her brain. They show the parts of her brain that are being stimulated. As the test ends, Holly says the researchers now know where to look.
Lots of what we know about the brain is to do with how it's organized and how we have these specialized regions. So the reason we did the first two bits is we know which areas of the brain we would predict would be active. So that makes for a very, very good demonstration, but it also tells us where in that particular subject is the bit of the brain that responds best to faces, where's the bit that responds best to voices.
So with Aislinn's brain mapped, it's time to start Richard's experiment to figure out how the brain identifies voices. And the first thing that comes through Aislinn's headphones is this.
I hope you are enjoying the experiment. Have you heard my voice before?
I hope you are enjoying the experiment. Have you heard my voice before?
These are the distorted voices of her co-workers. Stuart says they wanted to see how hard her brain works to try identify them.
And so it sounded like maybe listening on a phone, or it was raised an octave, played faster. And we tried that experiment out just to see whether it would be very feasible. And what we found out was, in actual fact, the brain does this task very, very well. And we didn't really see much difference in brain activity between the voice being very clearly played and the voice not being very clearly played, which is very interesting in that, yeah, you can walk into a room and you recognise a voice, but what we're not really seeing is any differences in brain activity pattern.
Then on to the next experiment. Inside the MRI, Aislinn is now shown a montage of pictures of her co-workers. Some of the pictures have the correct voice of the co-worker matched to it. Some of them don't.
When you watch that kind of thing, you feel that something's a bit odd. You know this is not quite right. I'm not looking at the person who's speaking. This is odd. And that's why we thought that feeling of being a bit odd should be reflected in the brain.
And we expected more activity when they were mismatched than when they were matched. And actually, we found there was more activity when they were matched than when they were mismatched.
What does that mean?
That's what we don't know. This is why science is so exciting. You get a result and then you have to do more science to work it out.
And while more science is needed to figure out why the brain is more excited when it makes the connection of a voice and a face, for contest winner Richard, he's just pretty blown away this all came from his question.
It felt like we were exploring the sort of the bottom of the Marianas Trench, because we're looking into the sort of area of the human body that is still so unexplored. And we were all looking through this glass, like in a submersible, discovering things and seeing things that really we shouldn't be able to do.
So did you get your answer?
I think I saw that yes, I could see that there were certain areas of the, I think they're called the cerebral hemispheres, that were working differently when you're registering things that you are familiar with and you're trying to work out things that you're not. So I think there's a lot more for them to discover. It's very special. It's one of those days you just say, yeah, that's a day to remember.
This podcast was brought to you by Oxford Sparks from the University of Oxford, with music by John Lyons. A special thanks to Dr. Stuart Clare, Dr. Holly Bridge, and the team that put together the Brain Diaries exhibition at the Museum of Natural History in Oxford. Tell us what you think about this podcast. You can go to Twitter, tweet us at Oxford Sparks. You can find us on Facebook, and if you want to watch back that Facebook Live, you can do that too. We've got tons of other cool stuff on our website as well, oxfordsparks.ox.ac.uk. I'm Emily Elias. Bye for now. Does that make you want to get into science when you get older, or is that way too premature a question?
Well, I want to be a professional football player when I'm older. But I sort of want to be a scientist as well, because there are so many questions I want to answer.